Well, it's very good to see everybody here this morning. I do appreciate, especially the visitors that we have, and I want to encourage you to fill out a visitor's card if you've not already done so. There will be a point at the end of our worship service where you can place that visitor's card in a basket as it goes by. We simply want to have a record of your attendance so that we can reach out to you and thank you for being here and offer a Bible study to you. If you're not familiar with the gospel, then we want to teach you the good news. That's all the gospel is the good news that salvation is extended to you absolutely free of charge. Now, there's a Bible that there's a phrase that occurs in the Bible several times called "things too wonderful for me." And I had been studying that phrase when something became very apparent to me. As a parent, you are constantly faced with questions that are too wonderful for you to know. Everywhere that we go, my children want to know things. And I like that. I appreciate that. I wouldn't have it any other way. I want them to be inquisitive. I want them to learn. And I want them to care that they don't have to just accept ignorance, but that they can ask questions of me, and they can ask questions of authority figures. They can ask questions of anybody that they find that is okay to ask questions. But every now and then, and by every now and then I mean quite frequently, I'm presented with questions that I have absolutely no clue how to answer. We were driving down the road, and we came across a building, a fairly inconspicuous, uninteresting sort of warehouse. And Sterling said, "What's in that building, Daddy?" And I just said, "I have no idea. I don't have any idea what's in that building, son. How could I know? It doesn't have a sign on the outside that I can see from the road. It has no windows. It's just a warehouse. I don't know what's in that building." But it's things like that. And they get deeper, of course, you know. When you have little children, they ask you things about astronomy that you have no idea about. Sterling also wanted the other day, he wanted to know, who knows the most about space? You get questions like that and you wonder, like, I don't really even know how to begin to answer that. Probably somebody who works for NASA, I suppose. Well, what's NASA? There are just some things that are too wonderful for me. I don't know everything about nature. I don't know everything about science. I don't hardly know a thing about math. I could probably tell you a thing or two about English literature, I suppose. But there are a lot of things in this world that are just too wonderful for me. A passage that we can read here is Proverbs chapter 30, verses 18 and 19. I think this passage speaks to this quandary that we have as parents answering silly or tough questions. The writer of Proverbs says in Proverbs 30, verse 18, "There are three things which are too wonderful for me, four which I do not understand: the way of an eagle in the sky, the way of a serpent on a rock, the way of a ship in the middle of the sea, and the way of a man with a maid." Now, one might be able to analyze those things in a scientific way, in a mechanical sort of way, and you can understand, well, I understand how an eagle flies in the sky. I understand that there's a weight-to-lift ratio. I understand that there's different kinds of components, that there's atmospheric conditions that contribute to it. I understand that there's a way that an eagle flies, but when you see an eagle flying in the sky, there is something transcendent about it. There is simply something about an eagle flying that when we see it, we don't just go, lift. We don't see it that way. The same thing goes with a ship in the middle of the sea. We can look at a ship and we can understand, well, I get that there is a mechanical side of this. I get that we can engineer things in such a way to take advantage of wind and flotation that we can have a ship and that we can understand them and analyze them in that mechanical, cold sort of way. And yet, when you're the one holding that rope hanging off the edge of the boat with a cool breeze in your face, there's something about that that is transcendent beyond the science behind it. The same is true of the way of a man with a maid. We can understand that there are factors, both biological and social, that contribute to people falling in love, and yet love is so... Well, that's what it is. Love doesn't have anything to do with hormones or biology. Or love just is what it is. So there are things that we can study and yet never really understand the why behind them. God is the same way. Just as there are natural events and phenomena that defy our best explanations, at the heart of them, that is, there are many aspects of God that also challenge us, that don't come with easy answers. Go to Ecclesiastes 11 and verse 5. In Ecclesiastes 11 and verse 5, very similar sentiment to Proverbs 30, where he says, "Just as you do not know the path of the wind, and how bones are formed in the womb of the pregnant woman, so you do not know the activity of God who makes all things." And again, we might be able to study the wind, and we can study growth in the womb, but why? What's the why behind those things? Why do they grow? Why are cells drawn to each other? Why do things grow? Why does the wind blow? Now, we can see the work of God just like you can see a baby growing in the womb, and you can see the effect of wind on things around it. We can see that there is a God. Romans chapter 1 makes it abundantly clear that the work of God cannot be denied. In a universe that has order, in a universe that is clearly created, there must have been a creator and a designer and a first cause behind all other causes. That's undeniable. But the why? Why does God love us? Why did God create us in the first place? And why did God give us free will, knowing that we would use our free will eventually at some point to hurt and disappoint Him? There are tough questions that we have about God, about His judgment, about His nature, about the spiritual realm. Angels, demons, where did Satan come from? There are supposed God dilemmas that atheists and skeptics will ask us. Can God create a rock so big that He can't lift us? If God knows everything, then God knows the future, then we don't have free will. There are supposed God dilemmas. There are explanations that we have to offer about various actions of God in the Bible. Of how can you justify the supposed atrocities of God in the Old Testament, His treatment of the Canaanites or the Amalekites or others like that, which we have addressed in previous lessons? So the question that I want to ask in our lesson today is, what do we do when faced with unanswerable questions about God? When there are things about God that are simply too wonderful for me? The first point that I want to make is that inquiry is good. It's okay to ask questions. It's okay to wonder about the nature and the judgment of God. It is okay to wonder about the spiritual realm. It's okay to wonder who is going to be saved and who is going to be condemned. It's okay to wonder and ponder things like free will and the future and the past and the timelessness and eternality of God. It's okay to wonder about those things and to ask the tough questions, as long as we are prepared to accept the limitations of our inquiry. And that's the problem that a lot of people have. They want to ask the questions without accepting that there is a limitation to the answers that we can get. What does it say in Deuteronomy 29 and verse 29? Wonderful passage in the Old Testament, by the way. A great highlighter passage, if there ever is one. The secret things, Moses says, belong to the Lord. They're in His realm. They're up to Him. But the things revealed belong to us and to our sons forever, that we may keep and obey them. What that verse is saying, at least within the context of this lesson that we're talking about today, is there are things that God is keeping secret. There are things about God and about His nature and about His judgment that He has not told us, and He's not going to, and we have to accept that. We have to accept that. Now, I can wonder about God and I can ask all of these questions, but I have to accept that there is a limit to what God has revealed about Himself. Now, He has revealed a lot about Himself, to be sure. And the things that He has revealed, whether it's things about His character or expectations that He has for us, those are things that we need to study. And those are things that we need to learn. And those are things that we also need to obey when obedience is called for. But the secret things, they belong to God. And there are other passages as well that illustrate that God has unsearchable ways that we'll look at here in just a moment. What I want to think about here for this particular part of the lesson is that we don't necessarily have to know everything about God to be okay with God. We don't have to know everything about God to accept that He is what He is, that His judgments are true, and that He is righteous altogether. And the reason I say that is because we don't have to know everything about everybody else to be acceptable and to accept them. Your plumber, for example. Are you okay not knowing everything about your plumber? I am. I don't know about you. I guess I can only speak for myself. But I'm okay not knowing everything about my plumber's life. I don't have to know where my plumber was born, what town he was raised in. I don't have to know what my plumber's favorite TV show is. I don't have to know what my plumber's favorite food is. I don't have to know what my plumber thinks about politics. I don't have to know everything about my plumber to accept within the context of his work as a plumber that he is what he is, and I'm okay with that. I don't have to know everything about a police officer in order to receive help from that police officer, or to respect the authority of that police officer as well. I don't have to know everything about my doctor. When I go to my doctor for medical advice, I don't really care what his favorite TV show was. I don't really care what he does on a Saturday night. I don't care about those sorts of things. I accept that my doctor and a police officer and a plumber reveal about themselves the things that they choose to reveal about themselves. And I'm okay with that. The same is true of our relationships. I don't really know anything about you except what you tell me about yourself. I mean, really, I can look at you and I can guess some things based on your appearance or what kind of car you drive or what town you live in, which suburb of Phoenix you live in. I can guess some things about you, maybe an accent or your hair color. But really, when it comes down to it, I don't know anything about you except what you're willing to reveal about yourself. And again, we're okay with that. We're fine with that. We're okay with the limitations of our relationship in that regard. I don't have to know everything about you to know I like you or to know that I love you. I don't have to know everything about you to sacrifice for you. I don't have to know everything about you to accept fellowship with you. I don't have to know everything about you. Good scripture here. In 1 Corinthians chapter 2, notice what the writer says here of our knowledge both of each other and of God. In 1 Corinthians 2, beginning in verse 11, "For who among men knows the thoughts of a man except the spirit of that man, which is in him? Even so, the thoughts of God no one knows except the Spirit of God." Now verse 12, "We have received not the spirit of the world, but the Spirit who is from God, that we might know the things freely given to us by God." That goes back to Deuteronomy 29:29, doesn't it? God has freely given us some things. He has, through His Spirit, revealed some of His thoughts, some of His ways. And He's given those things to us that we might understand them. But we don't know everything about it. We know everything about God that He is willing to reveal about Himself, just as we know everything about each other that we are willing to reveal to each other. And that is the limitation. So if I'm willing to apply that standard to other people, and I'm okay with medical advice from a doctor who I don't know really personally, and I'm okay with the authority of a police officer who I don't know very personally, and I'm okay with a plumber that I don't know very personally fixing my drains, if I'm okay with applying that standard to other people, then why do I have such a problem applying that standard to God? Why do we practically rip our hair out because there are things about God that he has not told us about himself? That there are things about God that are simply unsearchable and unknowable for the limited, temporal, physical mind of man. A couple of passages, Isaiah 40 in verse 28 and Psalm 145 in verse 3, speak to the unsearchable ways of God. God is unsearchable. So why do we not accept that God retains the right of privacy in some matters? Why do we not give him that right? Go to Psalm 139 now. And notice what the writer says in Psalm 139, beginning in verse 1. And we'll read through verse 6. Psalm 139, beginning in verse 1. O Lord, thou hast searched me and known me. Thou dost know when I sit down and when I rise up. Thou dost understand my thought from afar. Thou dost scrutinize my path and my lying down, and art intimately acquainted with all my ways. Even before there was a word on my tongue, behold, O Lord, thou dost know it all. Thou hast enclosed me behind and before me, and laid thy hand upon me. Such knowledge is too wonderful for me. It is too high. I cannot attain to it. I love the attitude of the psalmist here, because he reverses the inquiry. Normally, it's the person, the skeptic, the atheist, whatever it is, maybe the person who's losing their faith or doubting. Normally, it's that person who turns the inquiry on God and says, well, I want to know everything about God. I want to ask all the questions, and I want God to line up and answer every single one of them. I want God to give an account for what he did to the Amalekites. And I want God to explain to me why there are some things in Matthew, Mark, and Luke, and John that don't line up perfectly, at least as I think they do when I read them on the page. And I want to know about demons and Satan. Don't forget to tell me about Satan and where he came from. And I want to know everything there is to know about God. And until God answers all of my questions, I'm not going to believe in him. And yet, look what the writer of Psalm 139 just did. He said, actually, God knows everything about me. He's the one searching me. He's the one questioning me. He's the one challenging me. He knows everything I do, from the moment I get up in the morning to the time I go to sleep. And as I'm asleep, in between, he knows when I was born. He knows when I'll die. Such knowledge is too wonderful for me. Think about that. If knowledge about my life is too wonderful for me, if it's too wonderful for me to know the future and the past and everything, if it is too wonderful for me to know even my own ways in the way that God knows me so intimately, if even that knowledge is too wonderful for me, then how can I possibly hope to understand everything about God? You know, I'll be frank with you. There's questions that I have about God. There's some pretty tough questions that we all have about God. But I'm actually quite thankful that God has revealed only what he has revealed. Because I imagine that if God actually told us everything there is to know about him, remember, he is the omniscient, omnipotent, eternal God. If we actually knew everything there was to know about God, our brains would explode. Right? Right? It'd be like at the end of Indiana Jones. Our heads would melt. I'm actually really grateful that God hasn't told me everything, because when it comes to things like infinity or eternity, yeah, I kind of understand mathematically the idea behind it, but infinity and eternity, those are the sorts of things that will make your brain just melt. And I believe with a lot of confidence that God has told us enough about himself to fully explain his relationship with us and his expectation for us. He has told us enough about himself to answer the questions that are most essential to our faith. And he has not told us more than we actually, really need to know. The problem that we have sometimes is we want to fill in the blanks. In all the things that God hasn't told us, we're so crazy about them, they drive us nuts that we want those questions answered. So instead of just being satisfied with our place in the universe, instead of just being satisfied with what we can know about God, we want to fill in all those blanks with what we think we know about God. And I'll give you an example from the Bible. The three friends of Job, in the book of Job, thought that they knew some things about God that God had not revealed about himself. And that was a real problem. You're familiar with the story of Job, so we'll give only a very short synopsis of it. But Job was a righteous man. He was also a righteous man who happened to have a lot of stuff, a lot of kids, and a lot of wealth. And a time came when the devil approached God and said, "Look at Job down there. That guy, you know, he's only obeying you and he only loves you. He only has faith in you because you give him all this stuff and you treat him so well." So, through a process and a series of misfortunes, God allows the devil to bring Job down to the lowest that a man could possibly be. His kids have died. Every one of his possessions has been taken away from him. And even his physical person has been reduced to a lump of sores. And that's where he finds himself. Now, God didn't warn Job. God didn't tell Job. God didn't fill Job in. "Hey, Job, just so you know, FYI, all of this is happening because I'm testing you, okay? Just so you know about that." God didn't leave Job any messages. Job just went through all of this with absolutely no revelation from God whatsoever. But his three friends show up and they think that they know everything there is to know about God and that they can ascribe a motive to God that was absolutely untrue. They filled in the blanks. They took what they thought they knew about God, expanded it, and it became false. It became a mischaracterization of who God actually is. And I'll say this. When you read some of these passages, they're up on the screen, Job 15, Job 35, all of Job chapter 25. When you read passages like this, you really start to scratch your head and go, were these guys Calvinists long before it became cool to be Calvinists? I mean, they're downright Calvinists is what they are. And they mischaracterized God. They assumed something about God that proved to be untrue. So look at the end of the book and look what happens. Job refused to assume something about God, while the three friends did nothing but assume things incorrectly about God. And Job is vindicated. He says, "I know now," in verse 1, "that thou canst do all things, and no purpose of thine can be thwarted." If only we all had the same attitude as him. He says in verse 3, "Therefore I have declared that which I did not understand." Ah, here's our phrase of the day. "Things too wonderful for me." Things which I did not know. Now God chimes in. And he chides those three friends, as he says in verse 7. "It came about after that, that the Lord spoke these words to Job, that the Lord said to Eliphaz the Temanite, 'My wrath is kindled against you and against your two friends, because you have not spoken of me what is right, as my servant Job has.'" I didn't tell anybody why I tested Job. I didn't tell anybody anything of the sort. But you assumed. You filled in the blanks where I did not reveal something, and human wisdom led you to a completely inaccurate understanding of my nature. I think it's essentially what God was telling them. So are my questions ever going to get answered then? Am I just supposed to sit on my hands and live in ignorance and be okay with that? Well, let me give you some things to think about. If you have questions about God, tough questions or easy questions, things that are answered in the Bible or things that take a little bit of philosophical wrestling, If you have questions about God, I want you to think about your motive behind those questions, because motive can say a lot about not just the question or the answer, but about you. And maybe the reason why your questions aren't getting answered is because you're asking the wrong questions by the wrong motives. So, I want to look at what Jesus answered when Jesus was presented with tough questions. Now, Jesus is the Son of God. He is the Word. He is God. So how Jesus answered tough questions, I surmise, would be the same way that God Himself, the Father, would answer your tough questions. How did Jesus handle tough questions? Well, if your question stems from a desire to just confirm what you already think, you know what Jesus' response would be? He would say, "Have you not read?" In Matthew chapter 19, we read of a question that they came to him with. "Jesus, we've read in the law. What do you think? Can we divorce for any reason at all? Moses commanded us to, didn't he?" Jesus said, "Have you not read? Have you not read from the beginning? Have you not read the most fundamental concept on marriage that has ever been spoken, that has ever been uttered, that has ever been written? Have you not already read that?" The problem is that when you come to God with a question and you already think you know what the answer is, which the Pharisees did in Matthew chapter 19, they thought they had this one in the pocket. "That's right. That's right. Moses commanded us to give a certificate of divorce, so we're going to catch Jesus in a little trap right here." Jesus just goes, "Have you not read?" If your question just stems from a desire to confirm what you already think you know, Jesus says, you go back to the Bible and you test things by Scripture. Have you not read? When your question is absurd, Jesus simply says, "You're mistaken," and doesn't take the bait. Last week when we were studying Colossians, I briefly mentioned these kinds of absurd questions that we have, these ridiculous hypotheticals, things like, "Can God create a rock so big that He can't lift it?" And at first you go, "Oh, that's really, really deep." But I think Jesus would just shake His head and go, "No, that's the dumbest thing I have ever heard in my entire life." Things like that, when a question is tailor-made to be absurd, Jesus doesn't take the bait on those things. And it says, "You're mistaken because you don't understand the Scriptures." It's like our example here in Matthew chapter 22. You remember they came to Him with this question of, "All right, Jesus, let's say there's a lady and she marries a guy and he dies. So his brother marries her, but then he dies. And then his other brother marries her, and then he dies. And all seven brothers marry the same woman, and they all die. Who's she going to be married to in the resurrection?" "Ah, gotcha!" And Jesus just said, "You are mistaken because you don't get the Scriptures." That question was tailor-made to be absurd. And Jesus doesn't take the bait. When the questioner is unwilling to endure scrutiny, Jesus says, "Well, guess what? Neither will I tell you." In Matthew chapter 21, beginning in verse 23, they want to know, "By what authority do you do these things?" And Jesus says, "Well, I'll tell you what. If you answer my question, I'll answer your question. Tell me about John the Baptist. Where did he come from?" And they said, "We do not know," which was a dishonest answer because they knew what the answer was. They fully understood what the answer was because they knew if I answer this way, there is this implication. But if I answer this way, then there's this consequence. They knew what the answer was, but they were unwilling to endure Jesus' scrutiny. So I think that if you're going to ask God tough questions, you'd better be willing to answer some tough questions about yourself. And if you're not willing to endure it, then God's answer is, "Well, neither will I tell you." You want your answers? You want your answers? Well, then you better give me some answers as well. When the question comes from an ulterior motive, Jesus simply says, "Why are you testing me? Why are you testing me? Why are you putting me to the test?" This ridiculous question about coins and taxes and Jesus, why are you testing me? Look at the coin. Whose face and image is on it? Well, then render to Caesar what is Caesar's and give to God what is God's. And stop testing me. Stop pushing me with ridiculous little situations and ridiculous questions and hypotheticals. Stop testing me. So for honest hearts, the really essential questions have already been answered. They've already been answered. The things that we really need to know about life, about godliness, according to 2 Peter 1 and verse 3, they've already been given to us through the apostles. Truth has already been given to us in full because of the work of the Holy Spirit and the Word of God. The truly essential questions have already been answered for us. And we need to learn to be okay accepting that God does not play along with every silly hypothetical and absurdity that we present to Him. The secret things belong to the Lord, but the things revealed belong to us and to our sons forever, that we may observe them, that we may keep them, that we may obey them. Now, if you're not a Christian here this morning, you really ought to be. You're never going to find answers in yoga religion. You're never going to find answers in Eastern mysticism. You're never going to find answers in coffee shop philosophy. You won't find answers in man-made religion. You're not going to find answers in promiscuity, in drugs, in alcohol. You will not find answers in the flesh. You want to have your tough questions answered? At least the right kinds of questions, the essential questions, the meaning of life, where do we come from and where are we going after we die? Who is God and what is His character? Those questions have already been answered. It's time to accept those answers. He who believes and is baptized will be saved. So if the gospel call applies to you this day, then please come forward as we stand and sing.